Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Joining me is a woman who has heard my voice around the house. Her mom was a longtime listener, and now her mom is listening to her daughter here on Mixergy. I've said this for a long time, Nadia, that my goal with Mixergy is to do interviews for an audience of people who are building their companies with the idea that eventually they will come back on here and do interviews themselves. Called it the Circle of Mixergy years ago. I never thought that maybe like there'd be passive listening where you might be listening while your mom is hitting play on this and absorbing some of this. I'm curious about why your mom was listening. I'm curious about what you picked up from it. But mostly I'm here to understand how you built up your company, Perksy. Nadia Masri has come up with this company that allows businesses to ask questions of their audience, of their market, of their potential customers to understand them better. And when I hear this, I think, well, why do they need Perksy? Why do they need Nadia? Why can't they just do this on their own? And also, other companies have done this. I've interviewed other companies that have done this. So how does she do this for her company, for her clients? Why do companies even need Perksy to do this? And then finally, how does she compete with the fact that there are other people that are doing this already? All right, we're going to find that and so much more thanks to two phenomenal companies who are sponsoring me. The first is a company, Nadia. Most people are going to hear this. They're never going to want to sign up. And then once they do, their minds will be blown. It's a platform to help you focus. It's called Brain.fm. I'll tell you about them. You've got good earphones. You're going to love Brain.fm and those earphones. I'll tell you how they help you focus and get more productive. And the second sponsor is a company that will host your website, right? Everyone understands what they do and can buy in quickly. It's called HostGator. But I'll talk about those later. First, I'm here to talk about Nadia. Good to see you here.
Thanks so much for having me, Andrew.
Why was your mom listening? What was she trying to do?
Honestly, I've never asked her. But if I had to guess,
yeah.
I would say my mom's a voracious learner. She mm-hmm. reads as much as she can. She spends so much time researching. I feel like it's one of her awesome traits. I think I inherited it. I love research as well. But you know what's funny? So I started my first business when I was 17. And at the time that I remember my mom was listening to Mixergy, I was on my third business. And I feel like my mom just loves listening to things on my behalf. She is constantly sending me articles. She would come in and be like, Nadia, come do the Colby test. It's going to help you identify your management skills and figure out how you can exist professionally in the workplace. All these things. She signed me up for executive coaching. So I spent a year doing executive coaching on the side. That's just what my mom's all about.
And this is because she saw in you something. She's not necessarily looking to be an entrepreneur, but she said, I see in this girl who at 7 or 8 years old, talk about the yard sale that you did at 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah. So the one with my grandma. Yeah. So this yard sale, I discovered this story. I guess I remembered it recently while talking to my mom. When I was like 7 or 8, I decided to have a yard sale. And I decided to do this because my grandmother lived across the street from a park called Dufferin Park in Toronto. And at this park, they had a day where all of, you know, folks from the neighborhood can come together. They put all their stuff out and they had yard sales. And this is the first time I'd ever seen this. I thought it was amazing. You could just walk through this park and get access to all these toys, all these little trinkets and things that people owned, and pay 50 cents or 10 cents at the time and get this entirely new object. I thought it was phenomenal. And so I thought to myself, I really want to do that. So a couple days later, I was staying at my grandma's house and I went out into the yard. I laid a bunch of stuff out that I had found inside my grandmother's house and just started selling it. I'm having a yard sale. And at one point, my grandma comes out because she realizes like there's a crowd in her front yard. What's going on? And she discovers that I'm just selling her belongings. And it's like, no, and she's, you know, Ukrainian. So she's like, no, not for sale. No, go, like, shoo. And I was laughing about this. They're laughing over the story with my mom. But I guess that was the first sign of me really being an entrepreneur.
And she picked up on it and she supported you because that's what she is. That's what she's about.
Yeah, my mom.
Am I reading too much into a single incident? You tell me.
You know what? I don't know if that's the incident that sort of led her to support my entrepreneurial journey, but I think she's always been supportive of people doing their own thing and doing what they're most passionate about. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like my dad said this at one point, when someone asked how he felt about the fact that his daughter was a founder. So my dad, I invited my dad to a founder's dinner in San Francisco when I was living there, which seems like an odd thing to do, but my dad's awesome. So it worked out. And so one of the folks was like, you know, how do you feel about your daughter being a founder? And he's kind of like looked at them like, well, what do you mean? How do I feel? Like, my daughter's doing what she's passionate about. She's doing something that she loves and she's putting everything into it. I mean, like, what else can I say? Like, I'm incredibly proud of her. And I think my parents both share in that sentiment. I think, you know, I didn't notice it until later. I think it took a while for me to realize how my parents are supporting, because support comes in many different forms. That also means that when your parents are very supportive, they can also be very hard on you. You know, there are times where, you know, they pushed me in a way that made me felt like they weren't being supportive, but really they were challenging me to ask myself questions about what I was doing. And I think they just wanted to make sure that I was making the right decisions for myself and for my future. And there's always going to be a push and pull between parents and kids, but my relationship with my parents is very, very strong. And I think ultimately when they saw how happy I was, and when they saw that, like, I am so passionate about what I do and I love solving problems in the way that I'm solving them, I think that's when it really started to shine through.
Do you really think entrepreneurs solve problems? Like, that's the mission?
I don't know that that's the mission. I can't answer that question for everyone. I can only answer that question for myself. I think it's hard to understand the motivations of others. And I know for me,
what I mean, as you said, solve problems. I'm wondering, is it just like a thing that we say? Is it cliched, or is there more meaning to it?
I actually genuinely love solving problems. And I mean, like, across the board, like,
what do you mean? Like what? Where's an example of a way you solve a problem?
Like, I love games. I love riddles. Mm. I'm one of those people who's like, tell me a riddle. Like, I love riddles. It might take me some time to get it. I can't guarantee that I'm going to be as
But you've got to just puzzle it through until you figure it out.
Yeah. It's just, if I don't have something to work through, if, like, I always say to folks, it's like kind of my thing, may you always have a problem to solve. Uh-huh. Because I just genuinely like the concept of, like, sitting down with something that's very difficult. Like, we did it in a team meeting earlier today where we have this problem in the company, you know, just as one does. And we're just trying to solve it. And I love sitting down and thinking about, like, all the different ways that you could address one problem. I think that's what I like most. It's not that there's one solution. It's that there are many solutions, and that the decisions that you make are so important in addressing that problem or addressing whatever's in front of you.
How did you get into Harvard?
So I'm going to tell you a really interesting story behind it. I actually found a backdoor into Harvard. I did it in a non-traditional way. Uh-huh. So I actually started by taking courses at the Extension School. When after I exited my third company, I was like, you know, I want to learn some more. I love learning, love solving problems. So I was like, I just want to learn some more. So I took some courses, and then someone from the Extension School's academic advising department reached out to me.
What is the Extension School? I'm on their website right now. It's extension.harvard.edu. It's where I can just go and take a class in anything that I'm interested in. Just pay for the class, go and take it.
Yep. And then you can actually also do full-time degree programs. So there are different types of degree you can do. You can do exclusively online, which are, I think they're like associates, and then they're bachelor's degrees, which mm-hmm. has requirements. And to me, as someone who has historically, I mean, like, I think my education is like an abstract work of art. Everyone interprets it differently. I would say that the way that I look at education is I just want to learn, and I wanted to craft something of my own.
So, but you're saying I'm on their site. I clicked around, and then I see a register now button. I don't have to go through the application process. I just register and I.
Not just to take a course. To just take a course, anyone can take a course. Anyone who's listening right now can go to the website and take a course in anything.
And so that at Harvard.
Yep.
It's and take a Harvard and be a Harvard student. That's kind of interesting.
I'm not sure fully on that. You don't get a student card unless you're accepted into the degree program. So you can take a course through the Harvard Extension School, but I don't think you can get an email address and a student card unless.
So then what's different from what you did? What's different between that and what you did?
I had to apply. So I started off by taking courses, and then
just like I just described.
Yep, just like you just
got it. You just said, look, anyone can go and sign up for this. Some people go and do like a learning annex class or whatever. I'm going to sign up and take Harvard class. I'm going to learn. Yeah. I'm going to be better. And then you said, now I want to apply since I'm in here. And did it help you that you were taking an extension class?
So that they actually have like a process through there. So you have to take a certain number of courses. I think it's just three in the extension school. Mm-hmm. And you have to achieve a certain grade. I think it's over 3.4, 3.6 GPA. Okay. And then you can, and then you're eligible to apply. You apply through the extension school. You transfer in your grades. So they look at your, you have to be a transfer student in order to apply. So over the age of 23. So I think, you know, how it was positioned to me is it's for many entrepreneurs, folks that are running their business, folks who are doing something else, like, you know, let's say actors or, you know, directors, and now they're going back to school, they want to do something else. And so you can transfer your credits. So I did that. So they evaluate based on certain sets of criteria.
Okay.
Another one is you have to write an entrance essay. And a placement exam for them to basically place
you. You still had to go through the application process, but it gave you a leg up that you were already in their program. Got it.
Totally.
Okay. And you were,
but, you know, it is very different though than, you know, going to Harvard College, or going to HBS, going to Harvard Law School. I would say that the benefit, what I was really attracted to, because at the time I think I was considering, I'm like, you know, I've exited my third business. Like maybe it's time for me to go back to school, but I think I demanded more for my education, mm-hmm. Than just going and starting off as an undergraduate again, because I was 23 back when I was applying. I'm like, I already have three companies under my belt. I want to craft my own degree and figure out what I'm going to do next.
Got it.
I was also trying to get it done as quickly as possible.
Okay.
I was trying to kind of move into the JDMBA career path. So, you know, just get the undergraduate degree as quickly as possible and then go apply for, you know, study for your GMATs, your LSATs, and apply for JDMBA.
We'll get into what happened there because you didn't complete, but what are these businesses? You mentioned them a couple of times. I looked at your LinkedIn profile. I saw founder of Birdcage Media Group, owner
of... You got to start below that. College Pro Painters.
What was it? What was the first thing?
The first one, College Pro Painters.
College Pro. This is 2009 when you created it.
Yes. It would have been 2008, actually. But
2008. So you were going out and painting what?
Actual houses.
Houses. You got work to paint houses. You painted it. And then what did you do? Get other students to come in with you?
Yep. So the cool thing about College Pro Painters is I discovered the opportunity. I feel like I wasn't like learning how to run a business in school, and I really wanted to learn how to do that. And so I discovered this opportunity where you could basically buy a franchise and they train you. So leading up to the summer, so you run the business over the summer and then you have to find a buyer at the end of the summer. So it's almost like a pseudo M&A process to like teach students kind of like the full.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it's a great opportunity. And I thought what was really cool was, you know, they trained you on these weekend sessions. And then once school was out, you know, end of May after exams, literally on like everything from payroll to, you know, paying your taxes, how to hire folks, how to create a marketing plan, how to do postcode marketing, which is zip code.
They teach you all this stuff.
They teach you all of this stuff.
Cameron Harold was, I think, like the CEO of the company or the creator of the company. I interviewed him about it. He told me about this. I had no idea it was that deep that they were teaching you, that they were training you that much.
Oh my God. Deep, Andrew. Andrew,
wow.
Deep. Like it was also maybe someone at his level might not think that it's deep, but when you're 17 years old going on 18, and you're learning about it, like just how to hire people and you've never been taught how to do that and you've never hired a soul in your life, that deep. I mean, like today, I would consider some of the other things that I do maybe a bit deeper, a little more immersive. But at that skill level and at that age, it was quite a bit.
Wow, I had no idea. Okay, so you did that. Then you had to sell it. That was the first. What are the other two businesses?
So the second one, I mean, I was bit by the bug after that, Andrew. Like I had booked $70,000 worth of work that summer. More money than I'd ever seen.
In a painting business.
Yes.
And then how much of that do you get to keep?
I don't want to answer that.
But are we talking about more than 30%, more than 60%?
A bit more.
Wow. Considering how, like, I thought because it was so labor heavy that you'd get to keep just peanuts. No. Okay. So that's significant. Okay.
Depends how much you're painting also. Depends how much you're painting.
So you did a lot of the manual work yourself. You weren't hiring it out. Got it.
Also, let me just point out that my painting skills are just like forever awesome.
Because you learn.
Whenever my hands are moving, they're just like, can you help me paint? I'm like, you know what? I will. I love painting. Yes, I'm an excellent painter. Like, flex on them all the time. I'm like, look at this. I'm cutting lines. I'm just going around the door. I don't even need painter's tape.
Wow, literally.
Yeah. So, and then after that, I was just bit by the bug. I went into my second year of college and was like, man, that was so fun. And at the time I had a fashion blog. I'm not going to tell you what it is because it was super lame and the name's totally embarrassing.
What was it? Come on, tell us.
I refuse. Be open. I refuse.
Really refuse.
Ugh, fine, Andrew, just because you're prodding me so much, I will tell you. But I just want to let you know that you're very lucky right now. Like, this is like, you're like the only one, you know?
I got my fingers ready to type to our internet archive. Yeah, what is it?
Oh, God, you're in front of a keyboard. Just, yeah. Okay. So, the fashion vision board girl. So, I was really into vision boards. Because my mom.
What's wrong with this? I was really expecting something way, I don't know, sillier. Okay,
the fashion board
girl.com. Right?
It's kind of cheesy. I mean, when you got a great name like Perksy, I mean, gosh, like of all the things, I mean, you've got Leandra Medine and Man Repeller. That is a like way cooler name.
Man Repeller?
Yeah. It's a way cooler fashion blog name.
Okay. All right. So you did that. That was that. How much of a business was this thing?
So that wasn't a business yet, but that's kind of what started it. I was really passionate about that. I loved to write and I loved fashion. I love fashion and style. I mean, I've got my Fortnite t-shirt. You can't see it, but I've got great jeans. I've got shiny sneakers. I've got like, I love style.
And so that was you on Instagram. I saw someone, I couldn't tell if it was you or not. I said, there's no way. Like, she's running a company. She's not Instagramming like that. I guess that was you then. Okay.
Yeah, so the last post was definitely like 3 months ago.
it's gone. I just assumed it wasn't you, it was someone else who kind of looked like you. And then I just X'd out of that tab. Okay. So continue. You were telling me about the business before I interrupted you.
Yeah. So I was really passionate about it. I think I've always been fascinated by people. So why they do the things they do, what drives their behavior. And I've always found clothing very interesting. My dad is Middle Eastern and my mom's Eastern European and my parents speak Spanish at home. So very diverse household. And I just like what I've learned from seeing different cultures is, you know, the clothing that they wear, especially the traditional clothing, it's just so interesting. It's very reflective of the regions where they're from. Like in Ukraine, you can tell someone or where someone's from based on like the traditional attire that they might be wearing. Like if they're from the mountains, if they're from the city. I thought that was very interesting. And so I would write about the people behind like the clothing collections or like the photographers behind the scenes. So I thought that was the most interesting because like, if you think about work product, you know, whether it's a technology company or, you know, music or film, it's not the work product itself that's so well known. It's the people that create that work product and all the people that contribute to it. Okay. And I think that's what's the most interesting. So I would cover that. And then, you know, I was getting invited to New York Fashion Week. I was one of the youngest fashion bloggers from Canada to be invited to New York Fashion Week. It's really exciting. You know, it was 2009. I thought it was very awesome. Got a few interviews. It was, I guess, the first real excitement I've had from, you know, coming from Toronto and then being in the big city. And, you know, folks suggested, they're like, you know, you should try and launch a magazine out of this. So I did. And actually, I was encouraged by my business prof. Shout out to Professor Leanne Haggerty from Wilfrid Laurier University, if she ever hears this. don't have her contact, but if she ever hears this. You just said, you know, like the halls of this establishment are always going to be here. Like education will always be here. You can come back at any time. She's like, you know, I'm not encouraging you to make one decision over the other, but, you know, opportunities come and go. They're more fleeting. And I really thought about that and I was like, I want to go pursue this opportunity. And so I just like packed my bags, moved to New York, slept on a friend's couch in Brooklyn and started building a media company. I think it's more accurate to call it a magazine. Media company is kind of a flashy way to describe what Birdcage did. We did put on a lot of events. We produced like content, ended up doing some digital stuff as well. So maybe content company makes more sense, but I would say that was more, it was more a project that like was working to become a business. I think that if I were doing it today, I would definitely do it really differently, but I learn best by doing. And we had over 50 contributors. We had interviews with Marc Jacobs. So one of the things I did was hired a bunch of models to be reporters because they could get backstage and talk to designers after the show. So it was, you know, very big hustle mentality there. We had great content. Actually, someone told me recently, they're like, do you still have the content? Because it's timeless, right? It wasn't attached to a particular season. It was like interviews with like Stephen Jones, who's Princess Diana's hat milliner. He designed all the hats for the couture runways. Uh-huh. Like, you get a coffee table book. So I just well might. But you know, that business ultimately, it didn't work. There were technical issues, like a lot of like data loss because like our external plugged in hard drive, like didn't work. We'd lose content. Like a lot of things like that. And Also, the iPad came out at a time where we were hoping to launch, and that changed a lot of things in terms of how advertisers thought about putting their advertising dollars, especially experimental budgets, into magazines, especially print versus digital versus, like, you know, especially with the iPad. So that changed a lot. And being 19 years old.
This was a print magazine?
Yes.
So the got it. And so, print. Yeah, you were really bucking the trend.
Yep. And then the iPad came like 3 months before we were hoping to launch. And I mean, there's so much that goes into that. Like, creating a magazine, like, there's so much I just didn't understand at that age. Like, thinking about distribution and the, you know, things that I really didn't know, but I was very, very passionate about it. And I think what it taught me most was how to manage others, how to build a team, how to build hype. I think that's what really led to the next project. Someone took notice of it and was like, you know, I know BritKitch didn't work out, but you built a lot of hype. Like, a lot of people went to your events, and, you know, there are models all over town.
How did you get the hype? What's one thing that worked for you for getting hype?
I just told the story as loud as I could to anyone who would listen. And
what's the story that got people that interested?
You know, Andrew, I wouldn't be able to recount it word for word. I think it was just telling them what I was working on. I think I only do things I'm very passionate about. And when I speak, I think I do speak with a lot of passion. I think it does shine through. And just telling people, like, what we were up to and, you know, who we were planning on interviewing and what we wanted it to be all about. And the fact that we wanted to focus on people and stories and, like, the human element behind art, fashion, culture, music, film, what we wanted to get out there. I think it was so artistic that it piqued the interest of many.
The meaning and the mission behind it. The more you were talking about that, got it. All right, let me take a moment to talk about my sponsor, and then we'll come back to how you came up with the idea for Perksy.
Cool.
My first sponsor is a company called Brain.fm. You never heard of them. I did for years, and I completely ignored it. I said, yeah, I rolled my eyes, actually. I'll be honest with you. And here's when I finally decided to give it a shot. I've been, because it's summer here in San Francisco, I've been taking my iPad, going to interesting, sunny-ish places, you know, as sunny as you could get in San Francisco, and just working from inspiring places. The problem with it is there are a lot of distractions, people all over. And so I put my earphones in and I listened to music, and I still was not getting enough done. And I thought, maybe it's me, maybe just moving into a new environment is not working. I should sit at my desk. It's less boring, but fine. I'm more productive there. And then I said, you know, let's just try this brain.fm thing. I put my earphones in, I hit play on this thing, and there's something about the wave, the audio waves that they're playing, the music that they're playing, that allowed me to stay in a focused place. And at first I thought, maybe it's just new music. That's what's doing it for me. And then I found myself doing this more and more, several times, lots of different places, and getting focused and getting more results. And I was still cynical. And I went to, they keep saying, go to brain.fm/science. And I looked at the science, and yes, they've got this fMRI scan that shows how your brain is more engaged when you're listening to music than when you're listening to Spotify and all that. And I still am such a cynic. Nada, you just nodded. And when I did it, I didn't even nod. In my head, I go, yeah, I roll. Fine. Anyone can get any scientific anything to say anything. And I just didn't trust it. But then I said, you know what, dude? You're actually getting more done. You're staying focused. There's something about this that's working. Stick with it. And so I've been sticking with it, and I'm a huge fan of theirs. Sachit Gupta, our ad salesperson, called them up and got them as a sponsor. I'm very happy to say that, number one, they're sponsoring Mixergy. Number two, if you need or if you want a discount, you go to brain.fm/Mixergy and you will get it. And number three, I know you're not going to believe any of this. You're going to say Andrew got paid. Andrew's just maybe bought into something, another clever techie thing that he'll be passed within a week. Try it for yourself. If it works for you, even if it gets you a month of good focus work, you'll be happy and you'll thank me.
I literally wrote this down. I'm legitimately going to try this. I'm so excited.
I think you're going to see great results. And if you don't, what have you lost? You hit play on something, fine. And they do recommend that you do it with earphones because, and it's kind of weird. You will feel, I'm telling you, within 2 minutes, you're going to feel the wave. It's going to actually start to do stuff to you. Go to brain.fm/Mixergy. You, Nadia, are going to thank me for doing this. All right. By the way, let me, before I go to Perksy, you've said you've had exits before. What's the big exit that you had?
I mean, I said I had exits. I didn't say I had big exits. I think everyone defines that differently.
Okay.
You know, as you progress, I mean, keep in mind that when I was 17 and leaving college pro, I thought that was a huge exit. And then, like, I mean, to each their own. I've had exits before. I think the most important thing is what you do with it. To me, it's not so much about the money that you get from an exit. because that's not necessarily where my focus is. It's like, it's not my measure of success. It's the impact I had. It's what I got to
what
do.
What you did while you were there. The nice thing about it, it does give you closure. It gives you closure. Like, yes. If you close a thing down, there's an internal feeling that you have to wrestle with. It wasn't a failure. You learned a lot, et cetera. If you exited, it does give you this closure. I pass it on to someone else. The story has an ending. I could move on.
Hey, but I'm going to push back on you on that. So you said that, like, to have an exit. So if you mean like a financial exit, you're saying that gives you closure so that you can look back on something and be like, oh, it wasn't a failure. Or like, I didn't waste my time or whatever. I like object to the statement that requiring a financial exit, helps you discern whether or not.
I definitely think more money means that the experience was better. No doubt. More impact means it's better, but that's not what I mean. I mean, any kind of exit where the keys have been passed to someone else, the thing has been signed, you now have closure with it. It helps tremendously. It helps tremendously.
Yep. Absolutely. So Andrew, you said after the break, you were going to ask me about
Perksy. Tell me where the idea came from.
So circling on back to where we started, back to good old Harvard Extension School. Mm-hmm. So I was in New York when I was just taking the courses. And then once I got into the full-time degree program, I moved to Boston part-time. Well, I would say most of the time I was Airbnb-ing my apartment in New York. It was awesome. You make great money doing that. Wow. Like, highly recommend New Yorkers if you can get away with it. Wow. So was full-time, on campus, taking a bunch of different courses. And then about 3 months in, I got meningitis. So that wasn't a great experience. I lost my entire memory. I was at a huge conference and I don't know if that affected. I don't know if I shook someone's hand and something passed. I don't know. But I got the most earth shattering headache like you would not believe. And it's really fascinating. Like, this is going to sound really cheesy, but I'm going to try and like break down the cheese. Like, it's just, I know you're not lactose intolerant, so it's fine. And the way that I saw it is it changed a lot of my perspective. If you lose your memory for a period of time and you just can't like remember anything short term or long term, like, I still struggle sometimes to recount details from that time period. Like, if you ask me like a book I read or even topics that I did really well on, like for a short term, like I performed well in school and then wasn't able, like it might take me like 5 minutes to recall the name of like a friend that I made there. So that was pretty tough. It took me a lot longer to recover in full. So I was in the hospital for a while. I was on bed rest for about a month and a half. And then was able to recover the majority of my courses. They found ways to wait them. One, I just didn't get the credit back just because I left early on enough that, like, I got sick early enough on enough that it was cumulative. Wrote my exams later, early in the summer. And everything was weighted. It was actually very stressful. Everything was weighted, like on the final exam. But I experienced some personality changes as well. And the neurologist said, like, well, that's going to happen. Don't worry. Like, after about 6 months, it will come back. But it was really stressful. One of the lasting things that stayed was, sometimes I get stage fright. And growing up, like, I loved being on stage. I loved performing. Mm-hmm. I competitively danced. I was used to like doing solos at like the North American dance competition. I didn't have a problem with that. And the first time, so I took a Harvard Summer School course called Marketing Management. It was an HBS course adapted for undergraduate credit. And when I had to present what then was the skeleton of Perksy, I almost blacked out. It was crazy. It was the first time I experienced that. But so in this course, as I was making up one of the credits from a course I had to drop because of...
After you recovered from meningitis.
Yeah.
And meningitis, by the way, I had to look this up. Meningitis is an inflammation in the membrane surrounding your brain and spinal cord. If you have memory loss from meningitis, it's kind of common, and it's from brain damage through meningitis. We're talking about like a real physical problem to your brain. And you're saying you eventually recovered mostly from it?
Yeah. So I want to also make it clear that long-term memory loss is very different than short-term memory loss. Yes, there are folks. I actually have a friend who works in San Francisco, works at a tech company there. His brother got meningitis and like lost hearing, like in one of his ears. He's fully deaf in one ear just because it can affect you differently. So I had meningoencephalitis, which is swelling of the brain itself and swelling of the meninges around the brain.
Okay.
So in the process of recovery, like I was like hallucinating. Like different parts of my brain were being activated in very strange ways. Like my muscles would just twitch. Like if anyone's ever seen like a Grey's Anatomy episode where they're operating on a brain and they like tap a piece of the brain or like House, or they tap a part of the brain and like activates. I mean, it's not as dramatic as it is on.
But
on
you're saying meningitis is basically tapping your brain in different spots and who knows what's going to happen. That's what you're saying.
I mean, I'm not an expert, but.
You're saying also that because of that, did you end up dropping out of Harvard because of this?
It's not because of that. I would say that it definitely factored into my decision to build Perksy. So when I was in school over the summer, so we were asked to build a service to the Cambridge area.
Build a what?
Or bring a product or service to the Cambridge area. It was like for a summative project.
They just want you to create something.
No, like to bring one. So like, it was like, okay, let's identify something that doesn't exist here, like a blue bottle. So you have to do market research
and
plan around it, all of that. It was a marketing management course.
Okay. Like the blue bottle coffee company. You're pretending that you're bringing it in just to see how it would work. Okay.
Yep. So I decided to create my own. So I realized that there were students at Harvard, on the athletic team that were participating in clinical trials for just like pocket money on the weekend. And sometimes they weren't always eligible for those trials. So I was like, A, that's hilarious and respect the hustle. B, terrible quality assurance for researchers. So I decided to create an app called ULab. It consolidated all the school's studies and like fMRI studies from the psych department and clinical trials from the three participating Harvard hospitals into one feed that enables students to register. They were pre-screened and registered for the studies in the app and get paid out for the app. And after I presented and almost locked out, as I mentioned, my professor was like, you should consider taking this to market, but I do believe that you should grow your planet. And just because something's a great business opportunity doesn't mean that you're the right person to build that business. I have zero big pharma experience at that time. So I was like, it just doesn't make sense. But I'm like, but I do know marketing and I do have customers that I can call up. So I called some of my old customers and I was like, listen, are you guys, like, is this a problem that you actually experienced? Because we were exposed to some Nielsen tools that seem like the process seems like very mundane and like outdated. And they're like, Nadia, if you find a way to help us reach millennials and Gen Z, especially like that, like we will give you business. I was like, great.
Awesome question. So the pharmaceutical companies were going to millennials, just to your fellow college students and saying, we're going to pay you to do this study. And go ahead.
Not for ULab. So very different. So like,
No, I get it. I'm trying to just understand the jump from one to the other.
They would just have flyers. Like if you're in Boston and just like sit on the bus or walk down the street, you can see these giant boards, like the bus ads that are like participate in our clinical trial.
In our study. Got it.
Like they exist all over.
That's how they get people. So when I was talking earlier about brain.fm, that they were doing MRI tests while somebody's listening, it's possible that there was a flyer somewhere in Boston for something like this to test it.
Totally.
Absolutely. That's how they do it. Got it.
That would have been a great use case for you.
Yeah, I could see that would be perfect. It's easy to test and so on. Okay, and so you saw that. You said, you know what? I don't really, this is my world, but I wonder if there are other companies that could use millennials like the college students I'm in school with.
Yes, I saw an opportunity. So it started with students and the opportunity was, well, if these students want to participate in research for pocket money,
right,
and these brands are dying to talk to millennials and Gen Z, wouldn't it make sense to connect them?
Well, let me understand, how did you even get those companies? How did you even get to talk to them? You said that you knew them.
Yeah, they were my old customers or just like friends.
Old customers where?
Yeah, like all over the world.
No, I mean, this was not a Birdcage Media.
F460.
460 was your agency, am I right?
Not an agency, it was a tech company. So
what was that?
Yeah, so it was a social media tool or a digital marketing tool that consolidated all the brands. It still does. Consolidates all of a brand's community-generated content and social content into one feed, which they can embed anywhere into their digital space. And they can make those feeds shoppable.
I see. You know what? I missed that when I was going through your LinkedIn profile. Now I see it and I get it. And so that's the third company that we didn't talk about. That's the one where you were selling to big companies and you went back to them and you said, hey, listen, what if I could get you this? And they said, yes. Why did they even want them? What were they trying to ask?
I mean, it's not about what they're trying to ask. It's what they're trying to solve for. I think that's the more important question. So
what are they trying to solve for?
Like, I mean, that's, it's a tough question to answer because it's super vague, but I'll give you some examples. Like, I just mean, it really depends on the industry. Not everyone is trying to solve for the same problem, but like, let's say you're a retailer and you're trying to better understand how to get Gen Zers into your stores because, you know, there's some data that's telling you that everything's going increasingly online and they're looking to e-commerce. Other research that's saying that they're looking at, you know, these micro brands and these D2C companies. And some research that might say, no, it's just your company. So they're trying to figure out, well, what is the right research? You know, what does Gen Z want and why are they shopping or not shopping in my stores? Same with like new product development, concept testing, brand awareness. We do a variety of things. So
one thing that I've noticed, I was in Philly last week. I noticed that a lot of the stores had hard seltzer. And so I imagine that a company might say, we want to understand what they're looking for in hard seltzer. Why are they
done research on that?
Sorry?
We've worked with companies to do research.
You have.
Yeah.
And so I guess the way that I might do it is I might just go into a bar and ask some people who are drinking it or stand at a store and ask people who are drinking it and say, why are you drinking a hard,
Because if you walk into a bar in a particular neighborhood, let's say it's the trendiest neighborhood in town.
Yep.
You walk into that bar, that could be hugely skewed that all those folks are willing to try hard seltzer. Maybe they're also, you know, the folks that fall into the bucket, they have Equinox memberships, they take SoulCycle classes, they have away travel suitcases, they wear Warby Parker glasses, but they could fall into that particular.
They might be doing it because other people are doing it and it happens.
It's just like, it's also for that demographic. Like it's depending on the neighborhood, if you just walk into a bar, like you're not getting a real and representative sample of everyday American consumers all across the United States. And if you're a big company, you need to create products and or services that cater to your total audience.
Now, one of the things that I love about you is when I said that, you got so fiery, you leaned forward. Andrew, that is bad research what you're talking about. I get it.
Well, it's just erroneous. Like, it's just not, like, it's not the approach.
Okay, and so when you were starting out, how did you then know how to get a proper representative group of people your clients?
So Andrew, this is what I want to share because I like telling as many people who will listen to do this. So my belief when it comes to entrepreneurship is just because you have a good idea, and I think I kind of started saying this earlier, but just because you have a good idea and you have a great product concept or great concept for a service, it doesn't necessarily mean that the market is big enough. And then maybe it is, and you discover that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're the right person to build that particular product. Or maybe you think you are, but maybe you also don't have resources or access to resources that you need in order to build the company. And maybe it doesn't align want long-term. So maybe it's not venture-backable because you just want to do, you know, $8 million a year in revenue and that's it. And you're totally happy with having a business of that size.
Okay.
So I think it's really important to sit down and do the research. It's like, I'm big on market research. We have a competitive research channel in our Slack and we put things in there all the time. We do analysis. We want to understand folks in the market to the best of our ability, you know, as they pop up on our radar. Obviously, we can't dedicate a ton of time, but as much as we can, and whenever it comes up, we try to address it. But I showed up in San Francisco. So I was like, I'm going to go to San Francisco. And I remember my mom was like, I don't know, you might not come back. And I was like, LOL, mom, I'm such an East Coast girl. Like, what are you talking about? Go to San Francisco, call her after 2 weeks. I'm like, yeah, I'm not. So I need your help clearing out my Boston room. So I incorporated my company in September 2015. I spent the next 4 months just doing research, talking to folks who had tried to do something similar and it failed. So that was the one I was most interested in. I didn't want to know who was succeeding. I wanted to know who failed and why. For one of those CEOs, he was luckily happy to talk to me. He was like, I think it just wasn't our time. He's like, you know, if you think about it, like Perksy wouldn't have worked in 2011 because the proliferation of mobile just wasn't there yet. Like Instagram wasn't where it is today. So I think folks just weren't as used to just turning to mobile apps and spending as much time in app as they are today. I think the way that you're doing it makes sense. And I think your timing is right. So the timing was right. The market was ready. And then I just started figuring out how I was going to build it. I literally wrote a business plan because, you know, I'm super cool like that. Nice 68 page business plan. Took it to my uncle and I was like, can you help me edit this? I just wanted to get all my thoughts on paper and like my long-term.
It wasn't because you were planning to give this to venture capitalists and you felt I needed to do this for them. It was you had to get your thoughts on paper and think it through, and this provided the structure for that.
it's a big decision. So like, I knew that, like, I'm a very go big or go home kind of person. It's just like, you know, it's either run a really big company or just don't run the company. And so for me, I wanted to sit down and make sure that like all the right things were there. I'd thought through as much as I knew to think through at the time. Obviously new things cropped up that I've learned since. But as much as I knew I could solve for, I wanted to get it on paper because I wanted to basically make sure. I wanted to sit down, go through the exercise, and I'm like, if I'm willing to do this and I can read this a couple times and I'm just as jazzed when I'm done reading this the third time after going through like 68 pages, I'm just as jazzed. This makes sense for me. And then I wanted to make sure that I could clearly communicate what it was I was trying to accomplish. Also, it ended up coming up in handy because I'm Canadian and I recently got my US visa and I finally got approved. And they required a business plan, and I was like, thank goodness.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so for...
The U.S. required a business plan to get a visa.
Yeah, for my particular visa, the E2.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, so it came in handy. But I still like reference it from time to time because sometimes it's good to know what you're thinking at the time, see what's changed, and trying to think critically about whether or not you've strategically decided to do something different or you're veering too far away from like what you've always sort of wanted to focus on.
We're going to come back to a couple of things. I'm going to talk about my second sponsor, and then I'm going to come back and ask you, how did you get those initial millennials to download the app and to give feedback and to make sure that you were getting a broad enough group of people? And then I was on your website and the early version of your website, and there was just like two links, and one of them was to a video, and I couldn't find it on Vimeo. You told our producer.
How did you find that site?
I go back in time, and then you happen to mention to our producer that you did this on iMovie. I want to find out what that video was.
Oh my God, yes.
Access it. All right. First, okay, I want to talk about my second sponsor. It's a company called HostGator. I've talked a lot about HostGator as a place to go when you're looking to have a website hosted. I will tell you that a listener, I forget who it is, he sent me a message. He said, Andrew, I just want to disagree with you on one thing. I signed up. The one problem that I have with what you've said is, you keep saying it's unlimited domains, meaning I could host unlimited websites, and it's not. And I should be clear with you guys. You will have to pay for your own domain name. So if you come up with fashionvisionboard2.com, you got to pay for the .com, but then they will host it for you for free. If you decide, you know what, actually what I want to do is millennialresearch.net, whatever, you get the domain. They will host it for you for free as part of your package. Or what you could do is what I've done in the past is I get andrewwarner.com, and then whatever new idea I have, I put visionboard.andrewwarner.com, and I link people to that, and I launch that. Events.andrewwarner.com, and I link people to that. And with the HostGator account, you get to have all those different domains hosted as individual websites, super easy, super fast, and for free if you pick that middle option on a specific webpage I'm about to give you, which is HostGator.com/Mixergy. When you go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, you'll get the lowest price that they have available for hosting websites, and you'll get their great service, reliable hosting, and they will scale with you. When you're ready to grow, they will be there with you. Look at this. I'm on HostGator.com. It's called the Baby Plan. They've got to change the names on this. They've got to call it like the Upstart Plan, the Startup Plan, the something else. Make us feel like elevated by it instead of the Baby Plan. All right, but I want to do their marketing for them. I do want to keep.
Or maybe it's great marketing, and being on the Baby Plan is something that you want to grow out of, and so you upgrade to.
And maybe it's also less intimidating. Come on, it's just a Baby Plan. You can do this. Just go hit start, and you're good to go.
I think it's great.
Right. Maybe they did think this through more than I did. All right,
yeah, Andrew. Gosh,
you know, we have an agreement with our sponsors that I could say whatever I want, and for the most part, that's worked out well. But Sachit told me that I was not going to say the name of the sponsor. I really ruined the ad that I did with James Altucher. They asked me to talk about this thing that he was selling, and all I did was I talked about how he told me in his Mixergy interview that he was going to commit suicide, and I asked him how he was going to commit suicide, and he had his whole plan, and he gave it in the interview. And then I said, and by the way, he's got this product that he paid us to talk about it. And they said, what is this like rambling thing that Andrew just did? And Sachit said, I just sold this ad. I don't even know what you're talking about. What is this? So sometimes it works well that I get to riff, and sometimes it doesn't. This HostGator was, I'm going to give it like a B plus, a B maybe.
Maybe you just need some pushback. You just need a good,
I do.
Just be like, hey, well, Andrew, what about this? Did you think about this perspective?
Within the ad.
Yeah.
I actually have been
especially
thinking.
Especially if you're riffing.
You know what? I try to engage my guests with it, but they're a little afraid of being like combative with me. I even tell guests, I didn't say it to you, but if you've got something that you'd use.
Oh my God, I'm so not afraid to do that, Andrew. I will.
Oh, really? But what are you going to argue with HostGator? But maybe I should then invite you to just punch back. Like, tell me why HostGator is not good so we can have a little argument. That you're right. I do need that. Do you need that too? I feel like you do.
Yeah,
you
do better I love that. No. I try to tell everyone in our company to do that. Like
I do too. How do you get them to actually push back?
You have to train them from day one. And also that's my personality because it's the kind of family I grew up in. Like we're just like, it's not combative. I think like that if you dress it as being combative, I think it can have too much of like a negative connotation. Like I need you to push back because I want to play devil's advocate or I need you to play devil's advocate. So we need to do a push and pull. So like actually one of my employees was doing an interview and they'd asked him, they're like, you know, what's one of the things that Nadia has taught you? And it's so like weird to hear that. Cause I'm like, whoa, I taught someone something like that.
Uh-huh.
But I remember sitting there and being like, wow, interesting. He was like that whatever it is, like when you're in a conversation that coming forth and whatever you want to challenge, the most important thing is getting to the right answer, the right solution. And that Nadia doesn't care how you do it. Like we could, it just doesn't matter how, like, I don't need to be right. I just don't. I have no attachment to being right myself. I have an attachment to us getting to the right answer, which means that someone here needs to get to the right answer, whichever is the most likely to be right.
And the person who's doing the work is more likely to be right. But if they feel at all intimidated about bringing it up to you and telling you, well, we're actually not supposed to be doing that, it's a problem. But it's intimidating. I actually, we missed a deadline by like 7 days internally on something we were working on. And I said, Maricela, why didn't you push back on me? She said, I did. I pushed back. And then you pushed back on me. Go, do it again. Like, we could actually like disagree. If you think that, and the truth is, it's because I wanted to okay any text that was going out. But we all agreed that in this team call, she could have said, Andrew, it's going out to like 100 people. It's the ad we're testing. And then after the ad, who cares? It's only 100 people maybe who are going to go. Just say yes already and let's go. I need her to do that. And not just once, but two or three times because I have to respond quickly to what everyone presents in front of me. I'm not necessarily analyzing everything enough.
I think sometimes it's also because people are afraid, especially like, so let's say this is like, it's true. Like she wants to tell you the truth. I think sometimes folks are afraid that if they tell you something that you don't want to hear and you're the boss, that you might fire them or their job might be in jeopardy. But my perspective is I would never fire anyone for telling me the truth. Like it doesn't matter if I want to hear it or not. If you're telling me the truth, like it's not the kind of thing, like you just wouldn't get fired for that. I actually like deeply, deeply value that.
If anything, I'm constantly worried that I don't know the truth, that I'm off, you know, I'm constantly like, what am I missing? What's not happening? All right, I should get back into this story. You were saying that you had the business plan, you came to San Francisco, you did something with TechCrunch to disrupt, and then, and then we'll get
I know this is what you're asking. You found the website, the early website that has this video, and you mentioned iMovie.
Yep.
So the thing about this is I decided that earlier that day that I was going to register a website. So like I think I had like planned to incorporate like maybe it was a week before I changed it, done like a name change. Like I knew I wanted to start this company. This was I think September of 2015. Yeah. September or early October, one of the two, I think September. And I decided to register this website. And I was like, because I was like, oh my God, if I go to TechCrunch Disrupt, and I've never been to TechCrunch Disrupt, if I go to TechCrunch Disrupt and I don't have a website, like I can't tell people that I'm starting I have a company and I'm the CEO and founder of Perksy if there's no website.
Right.
So I literally made an iMovie video and uploaded it as the full screen site and was like, this is now my website. And what's hilarious is when we were talking to customers or like prospects prior, like immediately prior to launch, like right before in the late fall of 2017, there was one prospect that was like, well, then became our customer. So like one customer that was like, I really loved your video. I'm like, what video? And like that video, you know, the brands want to know. And I was like, oh my gosh, where did you find that? And then, but it was so funny. They loved it. I feel like we should bring it back.
I found it. I'm watching it right now. It's
No. Andrew, you need to stop it right now. You know what? You're not allowed to watch it without the music.
I'm listening with the music and what we're talking. It's in my earbuds.
Wait,
I'm telling you I'm listening to it. Like that, right?
It's a sleepyhead. Yeah. So do you know how to find a version of that song? Like that cut was a cut that we used at Birdcage back in the day. And like, I had been seeking, I just wanted that.
I'm impressed that you were able to make iMovie work. I watched Casey Neistat talk about how you can start with iMovie the way that he did. iMovie stinks as an editing platform. This is really good. Where'd you get the footage? Was stock footage that you got that was slowdown?
I bought stock footage and just like, yeah,
okay, I cut it. I think this is good. I don't know what you're talking about. This is great.
But like you compare it to what we have today and like, you know, we just finished working with a video team that were like literally went out and got the best. We have an amazing creative director.
I get it. Yeah. No doubt that this is, but I think what you did is great. I just can't exactly tell what the company's about, but I do get a sense of what the brand is about.
Let's see. This is pre business plan. So I also was unsure what the company was fully about.
Oh, so you just knew it's something brands want to know.
I am starting a company that is going to reward people for answering questions from brands, and it is going to be consumer research. Here's the thing. I've always been committed to solving the same problem. And so the way in which we've done that has evolved over time. And like how I've documented that has evolved over time. But the mission has always been the same, which is like, I want to build a platform, and it's going to be, there's a platform side, there's going to be an app side. That's what I know. And I'm going to help brands get real time research from their audience, and it's going to be better. It's going to be higher quality. They're going to talk to real people. They're going to talk to I've never participated in.
Yeah, Nielsen. Again, you're leaning forward. I can tell. I wish people could watch this. We've gone all audio now, but I could tell when.
No, like Andrew, like I'm literally sweating. Like I'm just no. like I'm fired.
I thought that it's interesting to see this kind of passion because there's still a part of me that says, well, maybe she just found a market opportunity. She's going to milk it for what she can. She raised some money. She's going to sell it. And then she'll move on to the thing that she's truly passionate about. But I could see the passion. Frankly, I could see the passion even in house painting and the fact that you don't have to use any of whatever that tape is that I can't even remember the name of.
Honest, though, house painting was definitely not my passion. So
Right. What I mean is that you're not doing things that you're not passionate about. You get worked up about what you're doing. The only time that I've seen you get anxious is about any design things in the past, even the name not being right, me seeing past websites that don't express your style the way that you care about. Let me ask you this. How did you get the first people how'd you get your first customer? Why don't we start with how are you going to get the people who are going to respond? And then we'll get to the first customer.
So I'm going to back it up a bit because I think it's really important to kind of explain how I got there. It was just me for about a year and 2 months. It was just me building Perksy. So I figured that I knew what I had to do. I needed to hire engineers. And I was like, well, no engineer is going to want to join unless they can see the designs. So I sat down and I was like, I can't afford a designer. But you know what I do have in abundance right now? Time. I have plenty of time. And only minimal money because this money is going to have to last me for a while. So I bought a bunch of textbooks, bought the software, and taught myself how to design. So the app designs that we use today are still the designs that I created back in the day. We've like evolved them a bit, but I still evolve them. So that's kind of been a interesting little tidbit there. But the reason I bring that up is because the design is so important. How you communicate the value to folks, it's really so important. Like I know people say it is, but I think they don't like, I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
But how'd you get anyone to even come onto the website and see the design? How did you get these respondents?
So it's different. Respondents I started getting first because like if you think about it, our audience is our commodity. Like we don't have a business if we don't have a strong audience, which is why we prioritize that. Like above all else, we make sure that we have a real and representative sample of everyday American and Canadian consumers all across the United States and Canada. And that to me was really important. But we started off by going to folks and being like friends and people in the community and just being like, can you get your younger siblings to download this app? And can you download this app? So that's how it started. So we got going that way. And man, these Gen Zers are crazy. Like we had once we hired engineers, our mobile engineer had a younger sister. We like needed a bunch of new Gen Zers. And this is like before we launched, we had like a beta version. So it was internal. It wasn't live on the App Store yet, but you know, of course we had everything on Test Lite. She got us like 300 downloads in like an afternoon. And like all of those kids became active. So like
and we incentivized her, right?
Yeah. I was like, I'll buy you whatever you want from Sephora.
Like, oh, that was it. Something. I thought it was like a built-in in.
No. Like, okay, keep in mind, this is pre-launch. Like, we got our we started building our audience pre-launch.
Okay.
Then we started going to high school and campus ambassadors. So I was like, this worked for me historically. So just like having in general, whenever you find some kind of ambassador, it worked out for 60. So having bloggers as ambassadors. So I decided to take that, you know, that kind of approach and just tried to track down folks. Like, I just asked people. I was like shameless. I literally once was, away for a 4th of July weekend. And this was like in Sonoma. And there was like there were some kids playing basketball on the way up the hill to like where like my friends and I were staying. And I was like, I was just like, stop, got out of the car and was like, I want to tell you about this app. And started talking about Perksy. And they were like, this is so cool. And I was like, awesome. So the value prop was so high. I would just talk to whoever would listen because like, I don't know. I call it, I don't know if it's shamelessness, but like, I already don't have what, like at the time I was like, I already don't have what I want. So if I don't ask for it, I'm going to continue not having it.
But you need thousands of people to use the app.
We have viral loops built into the app. Folks started sharing
it. What were the viral loops then? So once you got a few people seated, what are the viral loops?
I mean, so we were able to, yeah, so we were able to seed just like, this is even pre-campus ambassadors. Like we got to about 6,000 just from like absolute word of mouth, not in-app sharing loop, not using campus ambassadors. From there, we built a ambassador program that started helping too. They started inviting through the app. They get points for from there and they invite. So Andrew, if you download the Perksy app and you invite 20 friends, you'll literally get $20 if they have to answer more than 2 stacks. So there's a bit of a process, but it's like well worth it. The value prop's high. That's a pizza.
Okay. Like, I get that. Pizza. And so this is how you got people in. Okay, let's talk about the first client. You told our producer, look, I can't talk about the first client. I'm not allowed to disclose it, but I could tell a little bit of how we got them. How'd you get them?
Yeah, I can't disclose names, but I can disclose the scenario.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's usually either one or the other. It's usually flat name, that scenario. But so we got our first client. This is like pre-launch, actually. So this is like a test, and they worked with us in the beta phase. But they're a big beauty company, and I gave my first ever like actual big talk on Perksy at something called the PR Swipe Right conference here in New York. It's put on by Haymarket Media, and all I had was 10 minutes, Andrew. I just had 10 minutes. I was like, I've got 10 minutes to tell all these brand folks and these agencies and these stakeholders in this room that like, in a couple of months, Perksy's going to be on the market and they need to buy what it is I'm selling. So we got a bunch of leads from that. And then one of them acted the most quickly. It was an agency that was working on behalf of this client. And they actually brought us in for the pitch. And they liked us so much, their client liked us so much that they brought us in and then we were able to do a study with them. And that's how we started our relationship with them.
What were they trying to understand?
They specifically were trying to understand the skincare habits. So I'm trying to think of how to position this without any pressure. Skincare habits of Gen Zers.
Okay. I got it. And so you got them as a client. When we're talking about clients, what is a client worth to you guys? Hundreds, not hundreds, low thousands, tens of thousands?
So, that one I like genuinely just can't answer because we're a consumption-based model, meaning that like you could spend $1,000 on our platform, you could spend $500 on our platform, or you could spend $3 million on our platform. So it's a consumption-based model. It depends on the scale of the brand, how many markets they need to be in, how much research they're trying to do, different types of research. Like obviously, since we launched in January 2018, like we did 10K revenue in our first month, and it was just like all skyrocketed from there. And
okay, that gives me a sense of what we're looking at. All right, then you brought in within three months, you brought in a salesperson. What was the process the salesperson went through to bring in new clients?
So we hired someone that came, was a VP from one of the industry leaders. And so he brought a client base with him. He had very strong relationships. Actually, one of my old startup buddies was like, I used to work with this guy like at Millward Brown back in the day. You know, both of them had since left, but he's like, this guy's an amazing salesperson. And he was based in Canada. So and he had offers from like other competitors, and I'll bet that those offers were pretty good, probably better than ours. But I think he really believed in what it is that we were building. And he's like, this is the product that makes sense to me. Having owned Sample, like we're one of the few that builds our own audience. And that's really hard to do. Like kind of like the same way that you ask questions and you're like, how did you get people to even download this app? Like that's a really valid question, because it is hard to convince people to perform an action like that, download an app, then start using it, continuously use it. Like, we have very high retention, and we have like what we believe to be the highest completion rate in the industry.
And so what are, you said other people don't own their audiences. What do they do?
Yeah. So it's through third-party samples. So they use like APIs. So the traditional methodology is, even traditional as far as like digital goes, is basically recycling using a standard integrated pool of professional panelists. We're recycled through panel after panel. So they might use, go through an API like Lucid. There's some other companies out there that do it. They're basically aggregators of panels. So, all these companies can pool their panel together, but you can't validate that like those people are who they say they are. And there's no prevention on bots. So, I actually developed a feature on mobile, that we've since registered a patent on, that prevents bots from getting into the platform.
I see it. LucidHQ.com. That's the way that other people do it, you're saying.
I can't guarantee that everyone's doing it that way, but.
But that's the tool that you're saying that they use.
Not everyone, there are different providers. So like, I shouldn't like make that kind of generalization, but third party sample, yes, they are okay. Using third party sample. And like there are stories of like sample fraud. So like you'll hear, or panel fraud, like you'll hear about panel fraud where if like you've got a research firm that can't necessarily fill the audience, if they can't get the third party sample quickly enough, like they could go to survey farms in the Philippines.
And just,
yeah, I could get in trouble for saying this, but like, I mean, not naming any names, but like this happens. We hired the former global CMO of Nielsen, as well as some like industry leaders, like executives and senior folks from, Nielsen, Ipsos, Kantar, the legacy research firms.
And I see that's your hiring practice. I feel like,
it's combination. I hire the people that are right for the job.
What about Tom? That's not Mark Hurt, for example. Where did he come from? He's your COO.
That's who I was talking about. He's the former global CMO of Nielsen.
Yeah. This is like, there are a bunch of people who've done this before who are coming in and working with you. I feel like that's a Cameron Harold move. He's the one who told me, listen, if you're hiring, find somebody who's done the job before and can then do it for you.
It's like, it's not just about doing it for us. It's about having like player coaches. It's about having folks that are like in the ring with you and coaching. Like actually, I would say it's like having a boxing coach. They're right there on the side. They can tell you exactly what to do. They'll train you in the right way. And I think it's actually more beneficial to have them early on. Then like, you know, I think companies evolve and different types of folks get hired, but early on, it's so beneficial. It taught me so much. I mean, Andrew, my learning curve, as I told you, my mom is a conscious learner, kind of adopted that as well. Early on, like just having access to this kind of knowledge and information has been completely invaluable to me.
All right. I'm getting now how the business was getting built up. Let's talk about subscription. That was a big move for you to switch to subscription. How did that happen?
We just respond to what our customers want. I mean, like, I'm not sitting here being like, subscription is the way to go, and therefore subscription. It's more just like, one of our customers was like, do you have subscription offices? Or sorry, do you have subscription options? And we're like, yeah, sure. If you want a subscription, we'll give you a subscription. Like, you can buy enough, and then we'll price it accordingly so that it's more attractive in a subscription format. But like, not everyone likes the word subscription. So we started like, you know, playing around with the language that we use. We might use other words sometimes, but I think subscription was an interesting move for us. It was, you know, whatever your customers want, you just kind of got to do whatever serves them.
I thought it was Perksy Alpha. That's not what that is though.
No, that is not what that is.
No, that's more like one question at a time, right? 20 cents per person who fills it out. Am I right about this? Instant answers. Why are you looking like I shouldn't have found that page?
Because I'm just making sure it's not one of our old... I mean, you got a keyboard, so I'm going to have a keyboard too.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm constantly researching everything as we're talking about it. All right. I thought maybe the subscription was a bigger deal. She's... I'll let you.
Well, I mean, no. Like it is. It definitely is. It's been some of our largest. Yeah, this is there. Oh, wow. SEO picked this up. Yeah, this is very cool. Very cool.
I'll move on to another topic. You guys can do whatever you want with that page. Let's close it out with this. I want to end up on a high note, and that is that you told
me. Wait, Andrew, are you telling me that it hasn't been a high note until now?
No, it is, but not with this awkward situation where I just found something that now sends you scrambling to text everyone.
I mean, it's just a website. It's kind of like you said earlier that like when it comes to design and brand, I think it's just like. When you care so deeply about something, especially when you're so passionate about a company and you've spent so much time and energy building this, like these folks have become like my family. Like there's someone sitting right over there. I can see him from across the floor. And he was my first hire, my current SVP of product, Andrew. These people have helped me and contributed to my journey colossally. They've helped pull me aside when I've said the wrong thing. When I'm freaking out about something I don't be freaking out about, championing me when I need championing.
I see
that. They lift me up like that. Like it's just when you care so much about something, it's like every single detail matters.
You see, that sounds sweet. For some reason, I don't like sweet. I'm still like searching. It's Andrew Lynn. That's a senior vice president of product. Here's what I'm fascinated by. Here's what I want to get from you. You said to our producer, look, after meningitis, I decided I'm not going to accept low points. I would like to feel like I can't accept low points in my life. That feels like a superpower. I wanted to end with that. How do you get to a place where is that genuine, by the way?
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
What did you mean by that? I thought maybe because you had this meningitis issue that just threw you for a loop, you knew everything or you knew a lot.
I know what you're talking about. So it changed my perspective on how I define a low point.
What do you mean?
Like, so it's not so much that I don't feel them because like that's literally just like not a thing. Like I wish that was possible. But, you know, I think in order to be like if you're a passionate person, you have a lot of emotion and that means both like really like that's joy and that's also like great sadness. It's both ends of the spectrum. What it changed was that like when I meant I don't accept low points, it's how long I stay in them and how I deal with them. Getting meningitis, like Andrew, like I literally thought I was going to die. Like it's not a great thing to feel. Like it's very strange. Like I thought I was going to die. Like I remember crying at one point to my dad and being like, I'm going to lose, like my memory's never going to come back. I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life. I've lost every opportunity. I pride myself on my brain because I'm good at remembering things. I mean, slightly changed by, you know, how stressful life has become, but yeah, for the most part, like I have an excellent memory. Like this is how I get by. Like my brain is how I get by. And like, I'm losing that right now. And what if I never get that back? So I think it's just like, what pulls me out of this is it changed my perspective. I was like, remember that time where you thought like there was no more going forward? Like you just like you didn't think that like you could have like you just couldn't see like 10 feet in front of you because you thought it was just done. Like when you experience that, like I'm not sure you mentioned earlier that you spoke to someone who was planning on committing suicide. I wonder what his perspective is like. I think like I wonder, obviously, you know, lived to talk about it, you know, thankfully. I'm sure his perspective has changed too. Like you get to a certain point and you're just like, I will never let this, like, I'm not going to get stuck in this. I just refuse to get stuck in this because it could be so much worse. And it changed my attitude towards fear as well. I'm just not as afraid of certain things. I developed like even greater intestinal fortitude than I would say I had before.
I get that. I do tap into that. I didn't have a point in my life where I was going to die, but I did have a point where my financial life was going to die, where I was like $5 million in debt from what I remember. And I was too exhausted to try to figure out what to do. And I remember saying, if I ever get through it, I'm going to appreciate what I have. And I do now. Whenever things are bad, I go, well, you're not that down. This is like a dream compared to where you were back then. This literally would be your dream that you are hoping to get to. And it does help to tap back into that. All right. I think that is what I was looking for there. All right. For anyone who wants to go check out your website, is there any use in my audience even going to your website? I don't even think it's built for them.
Do people here have companies? Is anyone here building a product that they want to understand?
Like how would I use you? If I decided, you know what, I'm kind of into this, how could I personally at Mixergy use Perksy?
Actually, here's a good example. You could create a custom stack code. So stacks is our branded word for survey. You could create a custom stack code and anyone who's listening to Mixergy, you can give them that code. When they download Perksy, they can enter that code in a place where, in the sidebar. And then you know who's a Mixergy listener. You could target those folks and ask them, what did you think about my last episode? I mean, you could also do this on your own, but what's helpful is understanding the demographics. So understanding, like, what else do these people listen to? You know, what kind of music do they like? What kind of jobs do they do?
And they will get that without having to answer that question for me because they've answered it for you.
Yeah. So you can better understand your audience, the psychographics, the demographics.
Or do I have to pay to ask them questions if they're my audience that I sent to you?
No, Andrew, it's free.
It's free.
No.
No, but it's my audience. And why would I do that instead of just using my own survey software?
You can absolutely use your own survey software, but I would challenge you on what your response rates are.
You're going to get me higher response rates and you're going to enrich my data with more information about who they are.
Industry standard, 1-5% response rates. 5% is awesome.
So how much if I pay? Let's say 1,000 people. Let's suppose 1,000 people go to Mixergy.com/Perksy. I'm interrupting you and you're trying. Let's say 1,000 people go from Mixergy.com/Perksy. If we set that up, they install the app. They then get to answer my questions. How much is it going to cost me to ask them a question?
It depends. It depends on how many people you're trying to talk to. So we basically have a built-in pricing calculator. So it will let you know. You buy credits. So you could buy a certain number of credits.
Okay.
And then every time you talk to your audience, it would pull from those credits.
And what I'm trying to understand is, who is listening and what they I don't necessarily need to know what they thought about what's going on here, but maybe I want to know what else are they listening to? What else are they watching? What are they working on? Right. I do want to know. I felt like 5 years ago, I was really in touch with what my audience was creating. They were definite software engineers. They were there coding stuff, trying to figure out how to build a business. I'm not so sure who they are right now.
But Andrew, yeah. And that's a perfect use case for Perksy. But I also want to point out, you were surprised when you heard my mom was a big Mixergy fan.
Right.
My mom's not an entrepreneur. You just said, is Perksy useful to my audience? There are folks in your audience that you have no idea who they are or what they do.
I do want to know.
You just don't know everyone that's listening. And I think it's important to understand and think about it this way. It's also important for your advertisers to understand. If you're trying to grow your podcast business and you're like, I want to be able to command a higher price for some of the ads that we do, we want to be able to talk to better advertisers and let them know who's listening. Those advertisers care. They want the demographics. They want to know, how much is that?
Do I have to come up with the questions myself?
I mean, you can if you want. You can also have someone on your team do it, or you can pay us for service options.
And you guys will come up with a question. So if I have how much are you guys going to charge me for questions? I'm trying to come up with questions. I'd like to come up with something.
How's this, Andrew? Offline, we'll roll out the parameters of this, figure out what it is you're trying to learn.
So if it works, it's going to be at Mixergy.com/Perksy, and you guys could experience this for yourself, see if it makes sense for your business.
For starters, just download Perksy.
If it doesn't, download Perksy. Don't do what I did. I went to getperksy.com looking for the app. Apparently, just go to the app store. And you got a lot of nice feedback on your app. I got to go. We're definitely way over here. Wait, where is that? You got a lot of nice feedback on your app. Thousands of people have downloaded it. It's something that people apparently are into. I thought the marketers would be into it. I didn't think that users would be that into it. 22,600 ratings, 4.2 rating out of 5. This is really good. Yes.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, that's it. That's all I got. All right. It's getperksy.com, or do yourself a favor. Just go to the app store. That's the part that I didn't do before the interview. You were going to say something. I interrupted you.
No.
All right. I'm going to close it out by saying to people, look, do what Nadia did. Go to brain.fm/Mixergy. She wrote it down. She's going to go try it. Do it. I'm telling you guys are going to love it. They're not, there's no way, by the way, Nadia, that these guys can possibly afford to pay to sponsor me for a long time. They're not making a lot of money per user. I charge a lot of money for the ads. There's a reason why hosting services and the recruiting services like TopTal are buying for me. You know, one person who uses TopTal in a month, TopTal's covered the thousands and thousands of dollars that we charge. Brain.fm doesn't have that kind of model. They're not going to be here for long. Guys, go to brain.fm/Mixergy. You're going to love it. I'm doing this just because I think that you guys are going to really benefit from it. Do it before they stop out. Actually, I'll probably talk about them even after they stop advertising. And finally, second sponsor is a company called HostGator. Check them out at HostGator.com/Mixergy. Nadia, thanks. I'm sorry to run. Thanks for being on here.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew.
You bet. Bye. Bye, everyone. We're going to edit this in. As soon as I stopped recording, Nadia said, look, you want people to push back. I'm going to push back on something. What was that thing that you pushed back on that I did?
I was just saying that, Andrew, you started the podcast by asking three questions. And one of these questions was, like, why do brands even need Perksy?
And I did it with an attitude, you said.
And also, you asked about competition and, like, you know, there are a lot of competitors out there. So, you know, why this over that? And, like, you didn't circle on back to it. You did.
I feel like the competition we did get into, and it wasn't intentional. I totally forgot that I brought that question up with my plan of bringing it in the conversation. We did answer that question where you were talking about how other people use the APIs, how other people are even fudging the answers.
Fair.
You're right. But that other question about why would brands even use it, the one that I came up with an attitude, I was setting up the expectation that we are going to combatively get that answer out of you. And then I completely forgot to come back to that question, which also sucks for you because I've set it up as like a negative for you without giving you a chance to respond.
But it's not just that. I think it's just that, you know, I'm sure folks want to hear the answer to that question. I mean,
yes.
If I'm setting it up, yes. Yeah, but if you're listening to this podcast, you're someone who cares about learning about how people have built things and like why they're doing the things they do and like how they got to where they are today. And that's a really valid question. It's not that it had you know, a negative tone or anything. It's just that if you're going to ask a challenging question, like, you know, people probably want to hear the answer to that. And like, I guess, so your particular
question. So what is the answer? Why do brands then come to you to answer these questions?
Because we live in a world where people create products and services and spend so much money on marketing to try and get it in front of them. Just market the shit out of them. That's what they're trying to do.
Yes.
We believe in a world where you can basically integrate customers into the core of that process. So for me, like if there are reasons why I don't buy products. And I think that's important for folks to know. Like if, you know, I can't use a certain laundry detergent because it has a chemical that I'm allergic to, or something isn't sustainable or environmentally friendly enough for me. Brands need to know this. And also we're living in a world where things are moving so quickly today. So the habits, preferences, and behaviors of the mobile generation are constantly changing, especially since they're in shifting life cycles. So like even you, Andrew, like what your audience wants today may not be what your audience wants tomorrow, or not what they wanted 5 years ago. So that's why we built a platform to essentially help these brands move at the speed of culture, like what's happening on street level, and get more connected to that.
So, yeah, I definitely see that, by the way. When you talk about shifting, things are changing so fast. I think it helps for me to give an example. I feel when I started doing Mixergy, entrepreneurship was more of an admired job than it is today. And somewhere entrepreneurship changed, especially tech entrepreneurship. Sorry?
It was like kitschy and cool then.
Right. And now it's become this thing where you're not going to succeed against Google. And if you do succeed, you're going to be Google or Amazon. You're going to dominate people. So there's no excitement for it. And instead, there's been this excitement for influencers, be the YouTuber, be the Instagram influencer. And I took a little while to take that shift seriously. And it definitely happened, and it would be important for me to recognize that so I could shift the interviewees a little bit, if not the questions and maybe the guests. So I see what you're talking about. And so you're saying even I would need to be aware of that. Okay. And so
I also just think that like people, so, you know, you have like the Facebook situation in which people feel like their data, like their privacy has been totally violated because their data was stolen. So like a big part of our belief is like, okay, well, anonymize all PII, like personally identifying information, and you get to choose what you answer and don't answer and what you give up, and you're going to be rewarded for it. Like, you're literally getting like paid.
So your answer is, look, like, Andrew, the reason that brands are paying for us is they need to know these shifts. They're not going out into bars the way that you describe because they want to understand their customers, or there's some help in that. It's not accurate enough and it's not fast enough, and that's why brands are coming to me.
So later, what I want you to do is Google the P&G, type in like Forbes.
I did. P&G, I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Okay. Forbes P&G.
No, do this. No. Do you have Forbes Mark Pritchard? So he's the chief brand officer of P&G, and then do Perksy.
Got it. Okay. I will do that.
$50 is yet a typo.
Now I got it. 100% hit. Let me close out by saying this. The big thing that I took away from this part of the conversation from you at the end coming in and saying, Andrew, you told me I should push back and you want people to push back. I will. I bring these questions up at the top of the interview because these are the big questions that I'm wondering going into the conversation. And then if my questions change and what I'm curious about changes, I just ditch what I started out with because I don't care about that anymore because I've shifted. Now I've understood a little bit more. Those questions don't seem relevant. Meanwhile, the audience may not have shifted. They may actually have come in looking for those questions or maybe didn't care about anything. And now those questions are on their minds and I've got to circle back. In the old days, I used to literally write it down with a pencil on a piece of paper that Regis used to have in the office. I don't do that anymore. I shifted to at some point putting it on my Google Doc. I don't do that anymore because I feel like I've got this. I don't need that crutch. It's not a crutch. You absolutely are right to call me out and say, if you're asking questions and saying they'll be answered in the interviews, write them down or make sure to answer them within the interviews and don't do it in some kind of, by the way, we've answered it, but make sure it's very explicitly answered if you're very explicitly asking the question.
You know me, I love my questions.
All right, fist bump.
Fist bump.
Boom. All right, thanks for calling me out on that. Thanks for bringing it up. Thanks for doing this interview. Bye, everyone.